Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hello, Everyday Innovators. This is Chad. I have not one, but two guests today to discuss product innovation with. The first is Kimberly Johnson, who I met through Global PMI Innovation Practice Area. I learned that Kim had recently co-authored a chapter for an upcoming book. The chapter is titled Triggering Innovation Through Organizational Development. Her co-author is my second guest, A.B. Reynolds. Kim and A.B., I appreciate you joining me today and being the first two-guest interview on The Everyday Innovator.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's talk about your backgrounds a little bit. Kim, you're the innovation person, part of this team that wrote the chapter about innovation and organizational development. What's your background with product innovation?
So I started my career at 3M many years ago, out of college as a human factors engineer. And at that time, human factors engineering was a hard sell in the organization. People would always come to us after the product had been designed in terms of the features and the functionality. And so a manager in an adjacent group called Commercialization Services had found a way to shorten cycle time to market. And so I got pulled into that group for my human factors organization and became the project scheduler on a big government contract. And then through the years, I got more affiliated with innovation and the innovation process within 3M through a corporate scientist who became my mentor in one of the business units. Corporate scientist is the highest technical level you can achieve within the organization. And that's when I learned just all about the importance of culture of an organization, the climate, the people, the processes, a lot of the same things that AB taught in the leadership development area.
Excellent. And human factors, you know, today we probably think of it more as usability or user experience. Certainly a tight fit with product innovation.
So. Yes, it is. Yep, very much so.
And AB, you're the OD person on this team. What's your background like?
Well, I started in education, public education, but had the opportunity to go to 3M and facilitate the supervisory and management development programs there. And through that process, got drawn into working with leaders in their business units and developed a model that really kind of integrates all the different leadership theories and approaches and a whole bunch of tools to help managers and leaders be more effective. And from that, then me and several team members had a chance to work with about 120 different business units in 3M, helping them think about their strategy and how they wanted to implement it, and also how they wanted to lead it for a greater success. So they had a lot of fun working with all the folks at 3M. And other companies as well.
So was it at 3M? Was that the connection where you two met?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Do you want me to go a little bit into the background on how that kind of transpired?
Yeah, sure.
So the commercialization services group that I spoke about earlier, another one of AB and my colleagues, Diane Moore, was brought in because what my manager saw early on in terms of shortening cycle time to market, the whole aspect of the people, that you really needed someone to come in and coach the teams on their roles and their responsibilities and how that impacts the process and the cycle time. And so I became business colleagues with Diane first, but then over the years I stayed in touch with her. And then when she and AB were teaching the leadership development classes at 3M, I sat in on one of them as a participant to see what I could glean to bring into the whole project management arena. Because again, that's a very important aspect of innovation and getting your products to market.
Yeah, absolutely. How does it work inside the organization? Which is a good lead into the chapter that you guys put together, Triggering Innovation. So what was the motivation for writing this in the context of organizational development?
I think the main impetus initially was one of my longtime product development colleagues had reached out to me last summer, and he's active in Organizational Development Change Management Network in the Twin Cities. And he was aware that Roland was going to author the fourth edition of the publication, and they had never had a chapter on innovation. And so he says, hey, Kim, I know you're active in the innovation arena. Would you know of someone in the Twin Cities that would like to work on that chapter. So immediately, because of the OD component, I reached out to both AB and Diane and asked them both if I pleaded, will you please work with me on this chapter? And they said yes, and kind of the rest is history as we spent the whole summer and then into the fall conducting our interviews and creating our chapter.
So what does the chapter address? What's the main theme?
What we're really focusing on is trying to understand innovation. And first of all, we really focused on defining it because it's defined in lots of different ways. And the way we defined it was really focusing on innovation in the beginning, the creation of the idea, but also understanding that there is innovation as a product matures and then innovation as it's reached its maturity level. And decisions have to be made to either advance that product or not. And also, we wanted to learn about innovation from the innovators' mouths. We were, through Kim's wonderful contacts, we were able to talk with five different innovators and hear the story from their perspective. And I'm not sure we always do that. And there, then, we were able to capture their lessons and ideas and key points into some practices that we think are really important guidelines for organizations to follow and leaders who are responsible for structuring organizations to use. So it turned out to be a really nice flow.
I agree. And I like the aspect that we aligned it to the business alignment framework that AD and Diane taught through leadership development, because I always found that framework very useful in any type of consulting that I've done, whether it was internal to 3M or even external. Like just last year, I used it with a small privately held company and his CEO.
So I don't know if this is outside the scope of what we can get done together or not, but can you give us a nutshell of what that business alignment framework is?
Well, the challenge with helping leaders run organizations, which are pretty complex, is that there are theories and models that come at them from 100 different ways. So the business alignment framework or the business alignment model integrates all of these. So it deals with the whole concept of leadership, what your job is, and takes leaders through in very specific ways what you have to do around understanding your environment, setting your direction, building your strategy, building an operational planning process, communicating effectively in the organization, designing the processes that will help you achieve what your strategy is, then structuring your organization to achieve those processes, and then working with the people to promote and encourage and reward the types of behaviors you really need. So it's an integrated model. And when you're talking about innovation, it applies perfectly because you need to have a real clear picture of the future, how you want the areas in which you need to move to innovate, how then it fits into your strategy, how you want to operationalize that through the company, how you want to structure, and then how you work with the people to make that effective.
Excellent. So the chapter itself sounds like it's really practitioner oriented, very applicable based on the interviews from the five innovators that you talked with, and then bringing in business models. And this business model is really powerful because when I talk to companies about the importance of innovation, it doesn't operate in a isolated area, right? It needs to be aligned with the purpose, the strategy, and the objectives of the organization. And it sounds like this business alignment framework helps us figure that out.
Absolutely.
And in fact, a comment that came from Roland Sullivan, the editor of the chapter, when I saw him at an OD change management meeting earlier this year when I was presenting, he gave me an update on where they were at with the publication. And he told me, he says, you know, Kim, what I really liked about what you did is it wasn't pie in the sky. It was something very practical that people could implement within their organization. So the practitioner aspect is right on.
Excellent. And for the everyday innovators listening, I know that's what we all love is gathering information that we can actually apply to do a better job ourselves as product innovators and product managers. So let's talk through some of the specific steps now, Kim and AB. I know you organized the chapter around three factors. The first one you say is conditions must exist to allow individuals and teams to create innovation. What are those conditions?
I think that really relates more to the climate in the organization and the culture. So AB, do you want to talk a little bit through that and then I'll add in?
Yes. And the innovators, every single one of them talked about the oppressive nature that often organizational structures have on the ability for individuals to be innovative and have the resources that they need and the freedom that they need, and then for them to build these teams. The cross-functional teams are especially important in this area. And when the organization is too structured, too measurement oriented, too confined by a very traditional centralized organization, you're just not going to get the kind of innovation that you really want. Instead, what you really need to do is understand that people need to have lots of freedom and flexibility. You need to find little safe niches in the organization where these folks can work with some oversight, but really clear goals and really clear support and sponsors who are there to help them, which is sort of our second point here, is that the leaders need to really understand what it takes to get innovation in an organization, not from the culture to the goals to the communication process and through their own behaviors as leaders in terms of connecting on a personal basis with the innovators, supporting them, encouraging them, holding them accountable, but on the other hand, protecting them in organizations that want things to go faster than they possibly can.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things we heard from Mary Sonic and Eric Von Hippel on their lead user research, too, was that they train the teams in the lead user research process, and then the management walked away, and they just expected things to happen, and they really needed to stay engaged throughout the entire process until the lead user research really turned into something that was fruitful for the marketplace.
And some of the more insightful leaders, like Bob Hershock, understood that having formal product reviews or formal innovation reviews was really counterproductive. It put all kinds of pressure and all kinds of organizational penalty, a sense of penalty around people. Rather than doing that, what he would do is have informal lunches with people who were working on various projects, just to chat, talk about what they needed, what kind of support would help, what kind of clearance he needed to provide for them in the organization. So it became a very personal, encouraging process rather than an organizational evaluation process.
Yeah, Bob was the VP of one of the business units in 3M that I was in, and I got my project management team role within that organization with a lot of the work he had done. But like Dave Braun, my corporate scientist mentor, had said that Bob would have these meetings and tell the team members, okay, what barriers are you facing? How can I remove those barriers for you versus having them do a stand-up PowerPoint dog and pony show about what they're working on?
I'm sure there's lots of people listening right now that can really sink their teeth into this and resonate with the oppressive nature that you started talking about in the first place, right? That all the five people you interviewed talked about the oppressive nature that exists inside organizations. And I immediately think of the Dilbert cartoon with the pointed-headed manager, you know, mm-hmm. and putting the structure in place and reviews that don't really do us fundamentally any good. And this notion, boy, I would be a big supporter of having no formal reviews and doing it informally, seeing where projects are, to try to stimulate that innovation culture. So this probably leads us into the next factor and a question I have too. So that your next factor is leaders must spot and support and invest valuable mm-hmm. innovations. But I'm thinking if one of the key issues is that the conditions have to exist, and that's really from what we just talked about, a mm-hmm. responsibility of the leaders to bring that, then if I'm just a product manager in an organization and I'm under this oppressive environment, how do I get my leaders to support and invest in valuable innovations?
It goes both directions. I can offer an idea, then Kim, you can join in.
Sure.
One of the things is structurally, if leaders are very smart about what's going on in the environment and looking out into the future, and a lot of companies today are identifying the top five trends or the top five technologies that are going to influence their businesses. Then the conversation in the organization can be all about that future. What's happening? What's changing? What are the challenges? What are the possibilities? So you want an organizational conversation that's about the future. That automatically engages people. You pose a problem, a question, a challenge, people automatically engage. Now, that can work the other direction. If you're a really savvy innovator, and most of the innovators we talked to in the interviews talked about how much they had to learn about being persuasive and influential and taking their time to educate leaders. You can pose, you can present information about the future challenges, and then draw the leaders into it by asking questions, posing possibilities, and engaging them in the conversation about what might be. But that takes a different skill set than most innovators care about, or area of interest that they care about. It really requires them to become influencers and marketers inside their organization.
Mm-hmm. An interesting story that kind of relates to that too is he wasn't one of the people we interviewed, but he's a corporate scientist. He's from 3M. He's responsible for the micro-replication technology. And what he did, he was, you know, he was on the technical side of the house, but he understood the importance of being able to sell and influence his ideas with upper management. So he went and got a second office over in the business side in building 225 in the marketing area. And so he was close to the decision makers. And so he would always be able to stop in and visit with them and constantly communicate with them on his technology. And that's what made him successful and made technology successful.
He developed rapport he needed in that influence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that might be uncomfortable for some product managers and innovators to think about, you know, how am I actually going to develop these new skills and mm-hmm. influence others? Have you seen examples where someone who might be a serial innovator inside a large organization identifies that person who is a really good influencer and they team up?
Mm-hmm. That whole concept of teams of two.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Every single one of them talked about the power of the team, that the innovators are maybe 5% of the equation. It's the people you draw in to work with you who may have experience and skills in other functions, maybe manufacturing or other areas. But it is also the human side of it, the people who can make the product happen, who can schedule it, who can communicate about it, who can work with the leaders about it. So you have to think about your network and your immediate team. And they talked a lot about inviting people to join them, that there's this informal conversation going on about what am I doing, where am I going, and they would meet with anybody that seemed interested at all. And through that process, people would self-volunteer to work with them. Could I help you with that? Could I be involved in that? Or let me know if there's anything I could do. So they build these wonderful kind of floating teams to get things going. And then later on, they would draw the people in that they needed for the next step in the process.
Yep. Both Dave Braun in OH&S and then Art Fry, the Post-it Note inventor, talked about that it wasn't a solo journey and that they always had other people that they needed to work with in order to make whatever they were trying to get to market to be a success. And I was telling Amy on the phone earlier today too, we launched a innovation program at Hamline University this last January during J term for the students. And we did a lessons learned with the students at the end of the session about what their learnings were. It was really interesting. It really got through to them that innovation wasn't just a single person. It involved all the people and the teams aspect. And when I look through those various areas of the business alignment framework, the one that really resonates with me the most too is the whole people aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. And I like this context too of identifying the trends, talking about what's going to happen in the future, and creating that curiosity that does get people to kind of engaged with you and wanting to be a part of the journey you're on too.
Yeah. All you have to do is put a question up in the hallway, you know, How could we possibly figure out how to do this? And I'll bet you in 20 minutes you would have people talking about it and offering suggestions.
Good example. So when it comes to leaders spotting and supporting and investing in innovations, is there more about this factor that you guys looked at?
Part of what we've been encouraging leaders to do, and it's very challenging, is that in large organizations, they may have products that are new innovations that are brand new, products that are becoming established, products that are mature, and the products that are ending their life cycle. And you manage each of those situations differently. You ask for different data and you work with people in very different ways. And so if managers, and we work with people at 3M to do this and other places, could map where their product lines are and understand how they have to be very flexible at the different stages and trigger different kinds of activities, then they have a better sense of what's happening. It's not something that happens by default or the loudest, squeakiest wheel gets the attention. It's really a intentional picture of, okay, where do we need to put our energy around innovation? Where do we need to go? Where are the opportunities? And by being sensible about that, then people are going to make much better choices about where to put their resources.
And that kind of relates to the paper that I just read like a couple of weeks ago. It was at Harvard Business Review, but it was called Getting Out of the Box of Innovation, that whole aspect of so often we feel like we have to take the innovation outside of the organization to be successful. But if you work with those leaders that understand where you're at in terms of the life cycle of your product or your organization itself in terms of its maturity, and then you give them the leeway they need in certain aspects, and then you put more processes in place where they do need them, then I think you have a better handle on keeping your innovation inside versus spinning it out.
And keep things moving forward. Is there a danger in there? I don't know if this came up in your interviews too. Is there a danger though of the problem we often have of too many projects, too few resources, and not knowing really where to invest our time?
Sure. That's always a challenge. And of course, leaders are going to have to make the final decisions about what's happening. But I think by having the conversation richer and more public about innovation and what's happening and what makes sense, the decision-making process will be more transparent and everybody will understand better. Right now, it feels pretty arbitrary to people. Mm-hmm. Even though I know leaders are trying to make the best decisions they can and allocate resources, I think we're missing some things. And resources could be applied slightly differently than they are and gender more innovation in organizations that we're getting.
And resources are always going to be an issue in an organization. That's mm-hmm. a given. So kind of the culture that's at 3M is where you go and tap someone else in another business unit in terms of their curiosity or their interest in taking on a challenge to help you on the side. That really helps you in building those relationships to add additional resources without actually having them part of the formal headcount.
Mm-hmm. Good. And the two bits of wisdom there to have kind of push on the culture here is to have those conversations publicly, get people curious and involved, and think in terms of trends and what's going to happen to our organization and our customer base in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Does this lead us on to the third factor then?
I think it does.
Okay, so the third factor, as the product matures, leaders must optimize the innovation and eventually harvest the business or choose to renew the organization with a new set of products. Describe that a little bit more for us, because I'm not sure if I got everything pulled out there correctly, and what this third factor, how this impacts innovation.
So that relates exactly to the visuals that we have in our chapter on innovate or die and how you need to constantly reinvent yourself.
Yes, yeah, and innovate or die. And also it fits really nicely with the interviews we did with two teams. One was Dave Whitman, who works on the middle of innovation. And as the product matures, he says there are all kinds of opportunities for innovation. The users discover different things. The makers design better and faster ways to do things. More features can be included, more functionality added, with a lot less cost that makes it a much better product for the customer. And then at the end of the process, Mary Sonic and Eric Von Whipple told us about really learning from the customers. When they have these products, even very mature products, what they're discovering is they're combining them and linking them with other products and using them for other applications that nobody thought of using them for. And that the knowledge from the customer is amazing in terms of helping them figure out the next step with a product or a combination of products or letting it mature into the next technology. Mm-hmm. So you have all these choices to make along the way. And if you're watching that process well and really conversing with your customers, then you can extend a product, you can add to a product, and you can evolve beyond that product much more comfortably.
I think that's conventional wisdom that we take for granted at times as product managers, because we get involved in developing a product and we recognize, okay, we need to be talking to the customers certainly to understand what they really value, what the problem truly is, and that we're meeting their needs. And then we get the product developed and we verify that we actually did meet their needs. And then we launch it to the marketplace. And at that point, sometimes we kind of forget about that we could still be talking to the customer and figuring out how to increase the value of this and not just respond to what's going on with competitors and the life cycle of the product just as it naturally matures and then retires.
Yeah, it's not done yet. It's just begun.
Yeah, and those customers are changing all the time too as our product is in the marketplace and there's new opportunities to add additional value for them.
Yeah, build that long-term relationship. So perhaps that there's another opportunity with that same customer to go into another area.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So that puts together our three factors. We need conditions for innovation to exist in the first place. We need leaders that are supportive. And then we need to be recognizing that there is a life cycle here and that we can mm-hmm. continue to innovate even as that product is out and in use, and at some time have to recognize that it is time to retire that product mm-hmm. and move on to our next opportunity.
Yeah.
Very good.
Which can be done very well and very gracefully with your customers.
I'm curious, for the listeners, the chapter's not available yet, and I haven't had the opportunity to read it because it's under control. So the AB and Kim kind of gave me just a general outline of things that are discussed. Can you talk briefly about the five people that were interviewed? You dropped a few names, and I started mm-hmm. thinking, wow, you really talked to some interesting people involved in product management.
Oh, definitely. We could tell. So the first person we interviewed was Dave Brond, and he's a corporate scientist. I think I mentioned earlier, that's the highest technical level you can achieve in the corporation. And he actually became my mentor, and he was leading teams in occupational health and environmental safety. And we pulled in after we interviewed Dave, his VP, Bob Hershock, because he felt that Bob really did a great job of creating that environment and giving that support to the people that they needed. Then the second person we interviewed was Art Fry, the Post-it note vendor, and AB and I had a wonderful breakfast at his home, and I've known Art for years, and he's kind of considered the 3M mascot as it relates to innovation and the Post-it note, and Art just has wonderful short stories to share with everybody about.
I imagine.
Yep. Do you want to speak to David? Because you know him. Or in fact, I was so surprised that all the years I worked at 3M, I didn't know David, so I got to know him through AB.
They are all fabulous people. David has been a project manager in a lot of pharma and medical areas. And his strength seems to be building really effective teams. He's very smart in his area, of course, but he knows how to get the teams working and moving and working together and then branching out and connecting with other people. So his whole emphasis for us was about developing new applications for current products and finding the future for the products and discovering new ways to do things that save money and was a much better delivery for the customer.
Yep. And then the last one was Mary Sonic, and she's a division scientist. That's one level down from a corporate scientist. And she got support from her management, who was head of corporate marketing many years ago, and this was probably like the late 90s, to work with Eric Von Hippel of MIT. And so the two of them worked on this whole aspect of lead user research and just forming teams across the company and instilling in those teams in the front-end planning process, the lead user research process that would help them tap into new opportunities for new products, many times in very different adjacent spaces to the current product area that they were working in.
You guys put together a powerhouse of experience there for people to talk to.
It was fascinating. And so they're so wise. You know, they hit many brick walls and figured out ways to get around them and been encouraging and become wonderfully humble, humane, people while they're so incredibly creative. It's just a fascinating experience.
Yeah, and I got the sense, too, I told Amy afterwards, too, was that I think they felt really honored, too, because in a way, we were leaving a legacy for them by interviewing them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I might have to try to track a few of those down, too, and have them as future guests.
Oh, I'm sure they'd love that.
I might be asking you about some help with that.
Okay.
So when it came to the chapter you put together then on innovation in this OD environment, or context, I should say, are there other elements that help leaders and practitioners be more effective with innovation?
Well, we developed from their messages and lessons that they had learned and from the OD literature, we developed 25 different OD principles using the business alignment framework or model as the sort of a foundational structure. And it really does capture, I think, their lessons and try to turn it into action items. So, for instance, for leadership, we said match the goals of the company and the strengths and interests of employees. If you want to innovate as a company, hire innovators. Pretty simple concept, but often we hire people for other reasons. And if you really want an innovative company, you've got to hire people who are willing to live in that space. Think of Google today. I mean, they have very particular hiring practices for that purpose. And another one was around the business direction. Train the leaders at all levels in innovation processes and cycles and understanding the barriers and the aids. Right now, we don't talk about it as a field of study or a practice. Why can't we have innovation experts, not only good project managers, but people who really understand the whole innovation process in an organization that can help change that? Another one on your business strategy and operational planning is set and share innovation goals, technical development targets, and business success criteria. So these are goals are not so much about the financial outcome, but it's we really need to pursue this new area, this new technology. We have a goal to pursue filtration when we're studying one of 3M's field areas of focus is water as a trend that is affecting the world, as we all know it, and paying very close attention to all of the products that we need to use and develop to manage water more effectively. So for 3M, for the filtration business, it's been a huge effort for them to really work around managing water, moving water, purifying water, and obviously products that we're really going to need now and increasingly so in the future. So if we and set a target around improving our products and services around water management, then you can move a company or a part of the company in that direction.
So I'm getting a sense that you guys have really distilled how 3M does innovation and has through history from the perspective of these five legends when it comes to product innovators. And that these 25 principles are really, they're if you want to innovate as a company, this is really kind of a blueprint for how you make that happen. Is that
fair? Exactly. That's fair. That's actually our goal. That's what we really wanted to do.
Well, now I'm getting really excited about actually seeing the chapter and what the detail is, because I know we haven't had access to that yet. So speaking of that, I don't think you have a time frame for the book yet, do you? Do you know? It's being published by Wiley, right?
Correct. And the only thing AB and I know when I spoke with Roland earlier this year was that they're moving a lot of their publications online. And so they actually had a massive reduction in terms of headcount and employees. And so Roland says it will still go out. It's just that typical thing, less resources to do the same amount of work.
Okay.
So it's going to be later in the year. And originally it was supposed to be first quarter. I suspect right now it probably won't be till like the end of the summer.
Okay. Do we have a book title?
We do. It's called Practicing Organization Development, Leading Change and Transformation, 4th edition. Editor is Roland Sullivan.
Very good. And your chapter in there again is called Triggering Innovation Through Organizational Development.
That's right.
Right. And I'm really glad we've had the conversation because I'm excited to, I'm eager to get my hands on these 25 OD principles and think about them in the context of a blueprint for organizations that are increasingly saying we want an innovation culture. You know, we want people that are thinking about innovation and thinking about those future trends and how do we actually get there? And this might be the makings of a really good blueprint for people to adopt, particularly leaders, to look through what are the things that we should be doing specifically based on a really successful model. We recognize how innovative 3M has been and has created a successful innovation culture and put these 25 principles into play.
And kind of related to that, too, I want the listeners to know that there's another resource that's related to the business alignment framework, and it's an assessment called the Capacity to Act. That does an assessment for the organization around all those different areas. And I actually, like I said earlier, I used it last year with a small privately held company, the CEO and his entire organization. And so I found out where the gaps were and where I needed to focus with the people in the organization in terms of rewards and recognition and their operational planning aligning to their strategy.
Where could we find that, the Capacity to Act tool for business alignment?
AB?
Well, you can contact me, of course, and we can make that available to people who are interested.
Okay. Is that a service you provide then to go through and look at an actual business alignment?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Very good.
And it creates the wonderful conversations among the people who are taking the assessment together as a group conversation. And it sort of helps people evolve together to a conclusion.
Yeah, I think those kind of tools are really powerful.
Well, and this one really focuses on how well do we understand our vision for the future? Mm-hmm. And it'd be fascinating. You get 5 or 10 people in the room and have them talk about what they think it is. Pretty soon it's clear that it's not a very clear vision. And everybody's not in agreement. And maybe we should do something about it.
Absolutely. If you have 5 or 10 people you're asking that question to, you may have at least 10 or 20 different
exactly.
views of the future there.
Which, of course, is a big problem.
Yes, it is. We want to have a focused strategy, know what our mission is, know our organizational vision, and be working towards the same thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so I like wrapping up my time together with guests about asking for an innovation or a success quote and why you chose that one. AB, let's start with you.
Well, this I learned from a wonderful colleague, Nancy Stidger, who used it all the time, and it was very effective with CEOs that she worked with. She would say to them, "Your organization is structured perfectly for the results you're getting." And she'd let them think about that for a minute, and then they'd start squirming in their chairs, and then the conversation was open.
It is a good way of looking at our organizations do exactly what they're designed to do right now.
Exactly.
If you want them to do something different, change the design.
Exactly.
Okay, Kim, how about you?
So when Chad asked me this question earlier, I was a little stumped at first because I've never thought about my favorite innovation quotation. I've thought about favorite innovation books. But then when I had to think about it, it was actually one that was from Art Fry. And it came through an innovation white paper that was published back in 2008. And his comment in there was, "You have to kiss a lot of frogs to find a prince." So that's one of my favorite ones that have kind of stuck with me. And for those that want access to the innovation white paper, it is public knowledge. And if you can't do a Google search and find it under the Scanlon Leadership Network, you can contact me and I can point you on where to find it yourself.
Right, and I can try to add that also to the show notes for this episode. So
okay.
Maybe we can follow up on that afterwards too. So just to wrap up, anything you want to leave listeners with, including how to follow you on Twitter or contact you, whatever information you want to give?
Well, my Twitter handle is Kim J Innovation, so no surprise on that one.
And you can find me on Facebook and ask questions, and we can chat about innovation or OD, whichever direction you'd like to go.
Okay. And AB, what's your name on Facebook?
On Facebook, it's Alice H. Reynolds.
Okay. Yeah, we all call you AB, but Alice H. Reynolds on Facebook.
Yeah.
Very good. Anything else you two want to wrap up with?
Oh, this has been lots of fun.
Yeah, extremely fun.
I appreciate the time, and I'm excited now to dive into the 25 OD principles on how can we actually create an organization that has a strong innovation culture and wants to be more innovative. So thanks for making those principles tangible, and I look forward to getting my hands on the book when it's out later this year.
Thank you, Chad.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you both. And again, thanks to the Everyday Innovators. You guys listening make all the difference. We're trying to bring useful information to help make the world of product management, product development, product innovation make a little bit more sense and help you stand out in your career too as professionals. If you are enjoying this, please like it on iTunes and tell your friends about it. And if you have any recommendations, please email me. The easiest way to contact me is theeverydayinnovator.com. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.